Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. Feel free to download these audio files and share them with your friends and family. Please consider joining Beth Emmanuel's virtual community and support our efforts for the kingdom by clicking on the support tab at BethEmmanuel.org.
A great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. And she was with child, and she cried out, being in labor and in pain, to give birth. Then another sign appeared in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads, 10 horns, and on his heads, 7 diadems. And his tail swept away a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman and was about to give birth, so that when she gave birth, she might devour the child. And she gave birth to a son, a male child, who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up to God and to his throne. And then the woman fled to the wilderness, where she had a place prepared by God, so that there she would be nourished for 1,260 days. All right, that's what we learned last week. Should sound familiar to you? Remember, we were talking about these signs in heaven being constellations. A constellation appeared, a woman with this 12 stars and the sun and the moon, and a constellation appeared, a red dragon. And I was explaining to you that the woman symbolizes the nation of Israel, who is to give birth to the Messiah. The child that she's giving birth to is the Messiah. The dragon, it's going to tell us specifically that the dragon is Satan. We're going to learn that tonight. The dragon is symbolic for the power of Satan, the adversary, the enemy. However, the embodiment of the dragon, we learned last week in this vision that John is having, the embodiment of the dragon is the kingdom, the empire of Rome, the Romans. So, as the dragon comes opposite the woman in order to devour the child, to be ready to devour the child, we liken this to the Roman occupation of Judea and the Herodian dynasty, King Herod the Great, and King Herod the Great's aspiration to kill the Messiah child, the slaying of the innocents of Bethlehem, and in fact, all through the ministry of the Master, there's this hunt underway, which eventually does result in Rome slaying the Messiah. We learned also, we were speaking last week, we learned also regarding these 1,260 days that the woman takes shelter in the wilderness, and how this is the 3.5 years, the 3.5 years, corresponding to the book of Daniel, where it says, for times, a time and half a time. So, times being plural, time being singular, that makes 3, and half a time. 3.5 years, same as 1,260 days, and same as 42 months. Now, the vision is going to continue in verse 7. And there was war in heaven, Michael and his angels waging war with the dragon and his angels waged war, and they were not strong enough. There was no longer a place found for them in heaven. Is this happening in the future? Is it happening in the present as John is describing this, or is it something that happened in the past? And the reason I'm asking is because so far, everything that we read in verses 1 through 6 happened in the past. As John is writing in 90 Common Era, he's writing about things that happened actually before he was born, going back 90 years, right? What's going on now? This war in heaven. Are we looking at something that's in the future, that's going on in the present, or something that happened in the past? So, well, first of all, who's fighting here? It says the dragon and his angels are fighting Michael and his angels. Who's Michael? Michael is one of the four archangels. So we've been encountering these seven archangels throughout the book of Revelation, Michael would be one of these, one of the seven that stand before the throne of glory. This is the only place in the Bible other than the book of Daniel that the name of this angel appears. But he's supposed to be the head of the archangels. So he is the angel assigned to the protection of Israel in Jewish angelology. All right, so Michael and his angels. Michael, being an archangel, he has legions of angels at his command, even as we saw the Master said, if I wanted, I could summon 12 legions of angels even now, right? So Michael has legions of angels at his command, and these angels are involved in some sort of celestial unseen combat with the dragon and his angels. Who are the angels? The dragon's angels, these would be, as Paul refers to them, the powers and principalities in heavenly places, he says in the book of Ephesians. So we're getting a little glimpse into apostolic angelology once again when we see this war taking place in heaven. It turns out that the dragon is unseated. He's defeated. He and his angels lose this battle. So there's a couple possibilities. I think you could interpret this in some different ways. Because it says the dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. So what we're seeing here is the fall of Satan, right? And so there's a couple different ways we could interpret this scene. First of all, the fall of Satan is something that we know happens in the first week of creation, at the time of the creation of man, at the time of the creation of Adam. The adversary is thrown down. He loses his position, and he becomes he takes the guise of the serpent in order to seduce the first man and the first woman in the creation story and in the Midrash on the creation story. So this, the fall of Satan is already an established fact, and it's something that's very much a part of the consciousness of the Hebrew writer, of the Jewish writer, and it's very much a part of the weave of Jewish apocalypse, this idea of the fall of Satan. Likewise, we could be looking at the fall of Satan, maybe something in the future. Are we looking towards the future when there's, say, in the end times, there's going to be a big celestial battle between the good angels and the bad angels and something like this, and then Satan's going to fall in the future, and that'll be like the thing that kicks off the Great Tribulation or something? Yeah, maybe. Or are we talking about the fall of Satan during the work of the Messiah on earth? Because remember, when Yeshua sends out his 12 disciples to perform miracles and drive out demons, and they return to him and say, Master, even the demons obey us in your name. He said, don't rejoice in that, but rejoice that your names are written in the book of life. Names are written in heaven. I saw Satan fall like lightning, he says. And that's in Luke chapter 10, verse 18. But I don't think we're looking at any of those scenarios in this case here in Revelation. But rather, the one that I would support and suggest to you is that we are speaking of the resurrection, that Satan is unseated from his position of authority at the time of the resurrection. Remember that he initially can offer to Yeshua, at the time of the temptation, he says, if you worship me, I'll give you all the kingdoms of the earth. They're his to give. But after the resurrection, our Master says to his disciples, all power and authority has been given to me. Go into all nations. And he sends his apostles, he gives his apostles the directive to go out to the nations which previously have been the possession of the adversary are broken open at this time. That's my suggestion, that what we're seeing here is actually the defeat of Satan at the time of the death of Yeshua and the resurrection. So once again, we're looking into the recent past in the vision of Revelation 12. So Lichtenstein puts it this way, and this is the Evan Zohar. He says, the great dragon was thrown out, which occurred by the power of the Messiah's death, who conquered the dragon, as it is written in Hebrews 2:14, that through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is Satan. The Master also said in John 12:31, now this age is judged, or this world is judged. Now the ruler of this age, Olam Hazeh, this current age, will be cast out, meaning in the later days after my death. So Lichtenstein takes these two texts as his proofs that I'm right. That's... well, he didn't actually... He didn't consult me. He sees this as belonging to the time period of the resurrection of Yeshua. Verse 9, again. So the great dragon was thrown down. And now we're going to get some synonyms. Exactly who is this great dragon? He is the serpent of old. So serpent of old, this is a term, as Lichtenstein points out here. He is called the primordial serpent, serpent of old, in these sources, in Sifre, and in Genesis Rabbah, and in the Talmud in Sanhedrin 43a. So this is actually a title for the devil from Jewish literature, but it refers to, this particular title refers to the Garden of Eden narrative. How so? Satan is the serpent in the garden, Lichtenstein explains. He is the one who comes to Eve and brings death to the world, and all the Midrashim say that Satan dressed as this serpent, as we know. Also see these other texts on the serpent coming to Eve. I just wanted to point out that this is relevant because of the text in, well, let's go look at it. You've heard it before. But when Satan is judged, when Eve is judged, when Adam is judged, there's this cryptic little messianic statement in Genesis 3:15 where Hashem says, I will put enmity between you, or he says this is to the serpent, he addresses this to the serpent, he says, I will put enmity between you and the woman. Now, this term, the woman, is going to connect then, in the apostolic interpretation we're seeing here in Revelation, is going to connect to the vision of the woman that appeared in heaven, the sign, the constellation of the woman, okay, which is Israel. So on a literal level, we could read this as enmity between snakes and women, or enmity between the snake, the serpent, and Eve. But the way that the book of Revelation is interpreting it, the woman is Israel. So we're reading this, I will put enmity between you and Israel, between your seed, the seed of Satan, the bad seed, right? The seed of Satan, between your seed and her seed. And he shall bruise you on the head, you shall bruise him on the heel. Back to verse 9. Yes, Satan, who's called the serpent of old, who's called the devil, yeah, who's called the Satan. What does Satan mean? Adversary, the accuser, the prosecuting attorney is the way that we would translate it into modern English. Who deceives the whole world, he was thrown down to the earth and his angels were thrown down with him. Well, what was he doing in heaven in the first place? Well, this is his realm. This is where he rules from. But also, in the highest heavens, in the heavenly courts, he has a job. And his job in the highest heavenly courts is to be the accuser of the brethren, the accuser of all human beings, in fact, the one who keeps the accounts of sins and accuses in the court of the Almighty. That's his role. That's his job. That's where he gets the name Satan, which is a title, not a name. Accuser, prosecuting attorney. Anyway, it says, he's thrown down to earth, and the angels were thrown down with him. So I'm reading this, this idea of Satan being thrown down to earth as Yom Kippur imagery. Why? On Yom Kippur, we say, and the liturgies say, that Satan is silenced and cannot accuse us in the heavenly court. So for the rest of the trial, Satan's accusations are being lodged, But on Yom Kippur, we're praying, silence the adversary, muzzle the adversary. You know, bind the Satan so that he can't bring accusations against us. And that's going to come out in the next couple of verses. Verse 10, then I heard a loud voice in heaven saying. So we're going to get a little interpretation from the heavenly narrator. Now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Messiah have come. For the accuser, that is the Satan of our brethren, has been thrown down. And he who accuses them before our God day and night has been thrown down. He's no longer able to bring accusation against the brethren. And they, the brethren, overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb. So here's our point of winning the conflict. How did we win this battle? Because of the blood of the Lamb, and because of the word of their testimony, and they did not love their life even when they faced death. So this brings us back to remember why this entire book is being written. It's being written at a time of persecution. During the Domitian persecution, we're trying to encourage brothers and sisters, we're trying to encourage believers to hold on to the testimony of Yeshua, that when they stand in the Roman tribunal, they're not ashamed of the name of the Master, even though it may cost them their lives when they have to testify, when they have to witness, they have to stand as witnesses for the name of Yeshua before the Roman tribunal, refusing to worship the image of the emperor. They refused to worship the image of the beast, the emperor. They did not love their own lives, it says. They did not love their own lives, even when faced with death. For this reason, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, knowing that he has only a short. Satan has lost his position of authority in the heavens. How did he lose? The secret weapon was the blood of the Lamb and the martyrs and their word and their testimony. And so he's lost his position in the heavens. And so he comes down to the earth and the voice in heaven says, woe to the earth because of the wrath of the dragon. And he knows that his time is short. When is this then? If you're following my narrative, as I'm building the narrative here, when would this be happening? This would refer to, we're almost to real time, but not quite yet. This, in my opinion, would refer to the early martyrs, the period of the early martyrs after the resurrection. So this is the period of the, we call it the apostolic era proper. Okay, so the Book of Acts time frame, if you like. Satan has come down and he's mad. He has only a short time. So verse 13, and when the dragon saw that he was thrown down to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. It's interesting, the Hebrew word radaf, which means pursue, also means persecute. It's the same word. To pursue and to persecute is exactly the same in Hebrew. So he comes down to pursue the woman, or to persecute the woman who gave birth to the child. Now it gets strange. But the two wings of a great eagle were given to the woman, so that she could fly into the wilderness to her place, where she was nourished for a time and times and half a time from the presence of the serpent. All right, let's deal with the eagle wings first. The eagle wings... Where do we find these eagle wings? I'm thinking of Exodus 19, where Hashem says, I bore you on wings of eagles. Or Deuteronomy chapter 32, once again. And so these are where in the Song of Moses, it refers to Hashem carrying Israel on the pinions of his wings. So the idea of the eagle's wings should bring these episodes to mind. That is when God rescued Israel out of Egypt. He did it on eagle's wings. So it's metaphorical, obviously. The idea is God caring, undertaking to care for his people, to remove them to a place of safety. Where did he move them to when he took them out of Egypt? Into the wilderness. A place in the wilderness, Mount Sinai. And they remained in the wilderness, safe from the Egyptians. Likewise, what's going to happen here, what's happening here, is that there's this place of safety that's been prepared. Did you notice the redundancy from verse 6? Look at verse 6. Then the woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared by God, and there she was nourished for 1,260 days. And then again, down here in verse 14, so that she could fly into the wilderness to her place, same wording, where she was nourished for a time, times, and half a time, same thing, from the presence of the serpent. This is the mistake that I think most interpreters that I've heard this taught from have made, is to not realize this is the exact same thing. This is not something that's happening later. It's the same thing. Verse 6 and verse 14 are describing the same flight of the woman into the wilderness and the same pursuit of the dragon. So it's not like this happened, then that, and then another thing, but rather this happened, and then we had the little explanation about the war in heaven and the voice from heaven, and then we went back to where we left off the action of the woman fleeing. She's given wings of eagles, she's carried out in the wilderness for the same period of time, times, time, and half a time, 1,260 days. Understanding that actually clears up all of our problems. When did Rome pursue Israel in this period of time? Clearly, we're talking about the Jewish revolt, the events around the Jewish revolt, and the destruction of Jerusalem. So the Messiah is gone, he's been lifted up to heaven, and the dragon has lost his position in heaven, and he's angry, so he turns to pursue the woman. He pursues the woman, and the woman is given two wings of a great eagle to be carried out in the wilderness. So this is the only thing we understand. Rome is coming to destroy Jerusalem and to destroy Judea and Galilee, to attack the Jewish people. It's the wrath of the dragon after the Messiah got away. You know, Rome thought that they had nailed the Messiah to a cross and they were done with him, right? But surprise ending, the Messiah gets away. Now what? Rome turns her fury, actually it's the devil's fury, it's Satan's fury, turns on the Jewish people. But what about these two wings of the great eagle and this place in the wilderness? The explanation that Lichtenstein brings us, and it's also, I think, it's a standard explanation, it's well understood explanation, is that this is in reference to the escape of the apostolic community across the Jordan River to Pella, where they waited out the war. As the Roman war was beginning, in the last months before the legions arrived, there was a prophecy in the Jerusalem community that they should abandon Jerusalem and go take up residence in the Decapolis city of Pella, across the Jordan River. And there they remained and waited out the war, something like 3.5 years. It would be the correct time frame. So this is the understanding that Lichtenstein brings as well. He says, this is an allusion to the fleeing of the congregations of Judah that belonged to the Messiah across the Jordan to Pella and its surrounding areas up to the desert of the Euphrates River, as is told in the Chronicles of the Messianic Assembly, that is church history, as they recalled the words of the Master to escape from Jerusalem. All right. See, does that work? I think it does. Let's follow it. Let's see how well that works. So the two wings of the great eagle were given to the woman. Now we're focusing in from Israel. We're focusing in on a specific segment of Israel. That is the apostolic community, a rather large community, but just a specific segment, so that she could fly into the wilderness to her place, where she was nourished for a time, times, and half a time from the presence of the serpent. And this is true. This is the believers waited out the war, safe from Rome for some reason. And the serpent, what does the serpent do then? The serpent poured water like a river out of his mouth after the woman, so that he might cause her to be swept away by the flood. This is in reference to the Roman legions coming through the land. So the legions do come pouring through Galilee, and then as they come down from Galilee, they come down Perea, which is, you know, Perea being the far side of the Jordan, and Pella is in Perea, and they savagely massacre everything in their wake, the Jewish communities in their wake. But Pella is spared, and the believers are spared. And so we find several such allusions to, well, here's Liechtenstein on the river and the flood. He says, in many places the prophets compared the flow of the military strength of the foes to the flow of a river or sea. So too here the meaning is that the military strength of the Romans, who are the emissaries of Satan, will chase after them to conquer them. However, those who are pursuing will die, but the earth will come to help and swallow them whole. Anyway, so the serpent poured water like a river out of his mouth after the woman so that he might cause her to be swept away with the flood. But the earth helped the woman. The earth opened its mouth, drank up the river, which the dragon poured forth from his mouth. I'm not sure on how the earth accomplished the swallowing up of the Roman hosts. When the earth is swallowing them, they're dying. They're dead and buried. So what we're seeing is the death of these hosts. Okay, that's how the earth swallows them up. I think what we are making reference to is a very interesting thing, that during the last year of the war in Jerusalem, the war in Judea, the Roman war against Jerusalem, Nero died. And when Nero died, there were three contenders, three different emperors who wanted to take over after him. And so what happened in those next couple years was an amazing civil war where Roman legions were marching against Roman legions. And there was an incredible bloodletting that devastated the Roman armies. And so I think what we're referring to here is when it says the earth swallowed them up, is referring to the death toll of the civil war in Rome that ensued at the very end of the Jewish revolt. And so many of the legions, of course, were recalled then back to Italy to fight one another. So that's my theory, anyway. You can take that or leave it. I'm not sure what else you would do with this earth opening its mouth and drinking up these rivers. The end result of all of this, then, is that the dragon was enraged with the woman and went off to make war with the rest of her children. The rest of her children. And when it says to make war with the rest of her children, it actually says the rest of her seed. It doesn't say children in Greek, it says seed. So this brings our minds once more back to Genesis 3:15. Regarding the dragon or the serpent is going to bruise the seed of the woman, and the seed of the woman is going to bruise the head of the serpent. We see combat happening here. So the dragon is enraged with the woman, and he goes off to make war with the rest of her children. This is the persecution of the Jewish people that ensues after the Jewish revolt. And who are her children? The rest of the Jewish people living in diaspora. Who are her children? Those who keep the commandments of God, that is the Torah, and who hold to the testimony of Yeshua. So we see by using this kind of language, those who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Yeshua, we're making reference to Jews, Jewish believers, and Gentile believers, all of these being understood as the seed of the woman. When it says, keep the commandments of God, that is the Torah. When it says, hold to the testimony of Yeshua, that is, again, that is confessing allegiance to Yeshua of Nazareth before the Roman tribunal. not abandoning, or also before those who might inform on you, not abandoning your faith in Yeshua. And this is being spoken. This is behind the veil. Look, what's going on behind the veil? This is being spoken to these communities who are suffering this persecution. And the vision of Revelation chapter 12 is trying to give them a bigger picture to say, you know what's really happening here? This is the dragon. He's angry. He was unable to destroy the Messiah. He was unable to destroy the woman. And so now he's pursuing the children, the seed of the woman. And that's why we're suffering. That's why Rome is persecuting us now. That's the meaning of the vision. I'm going to close now just by actually rereading the whole thing, now that we understand it. And what I did was I took out the middle bits about a voice in heaven, you know, the interpretation from the voice in heaven, now the kingdom is initiated and so forth. I took out those parts. I also took out the disjuncture between the first six verses and the rest of the narrative. I put them together so that it reads as a continual sequence, all right? But it's all the same text. But now, understanding the symbolism at work here regarding the first century politics and so forth, and the Jewish revolt, and the pursuit of the believers, we'll read the full vision without interruptions. And a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. She was pregnant and crying out in birth pains and the agony of giving birth. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his heads 7 diadems. His tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she bore her child, he might devour it. Now war arose in heaven, Michael and his angels fighting against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought back, but he was defeated, and there was no longer any place for them in heaven. And the great dragon was thrown down, that ancient serpent who is called the devil and Satan, the deceiver of the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. Woe to you, O earth and sea, for the devil has come down to you in great wrath, because he knows that his time is short. She gave birth to a male child, one who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. But her child was caught up to God and to his throne. And when the dragon saw that he had been thrown down to the earth, he pursued the woman who had given birth to the male child. But the woman was given 2 wings of a great eagle so that she might fly from the serpent into the wilderness. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God in which she is to be nourished for 1,260 days, for a time and times and half a time. The serpent poured water like a river out of his mouth after the woman to sweep her away with a flood. But the earth came to the help of the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed the river that the dragon had poured forth from his mouth. Then the dragon became furious with the woman, and went off to make war on the rest of her offspring, on those who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Yeshua. Take on my yoke and learn from me and find rest for your soul.